Welcome back to another episode of the Talking Calcio Podcast with Dr. Crane, Nick Frazier here on the Game Nashville Sports Network. It's been a while, but Claudio, we're back in action. Claudio Villalobos with Nashville Total Sports is here alongside to join for the episode and have a grand old time talking about Nashville SC and their recent form. And it just keeps going up, up, and up. The roller coaster does not want to come down. Claudio, I mean, give us your thoughts, man. This team is on a roll.
It is. It is. Well, hello to everyone. That hopefully, I wish you were respecting our new podcast. It's been a while. A lot that's happening. Many games. We're busy everywhere. Nick, it's not an excuse. It's just the way things are. Mm-hmm. But Nashville is also busy. Busy winning. Busy making scoring points, which is nice to see. From a team that last year gave its fans so many headaches, especially in the last, in the second part of the season. It had a season that we only remember it because it's a good comparison to see how things are going so well this year, Nick.
Yeah, I mean, Nashville, they only had one hiccup so far in their last, I guess, three games, and that was against DC United with the 0-0 draw. And we'll get there. We'll start there, Claudio, with Nashville kind of feeling themselves for the most part as they went in to go face DC at home and ended in a 0-0 draw. A lot of fans were pretty excited. I was excited about the game. I thought Nashville would kind of take care of business because, like I've mentioned, and I'll keep reiterating, earlier in the year, Claudio, with this podcast, I mentioned that, you know, Nashville SC needs to take care of business against teams at the lower half of the table. And unfortunately, Nashville didn't get the win, but they only left 2 points on the board there. They collected 1 point for the standings. They're now currently, after all their slew of games, third in the Eastern Conference at 27 points, which is pretty impressive looking back at what BJ Callahan has kind of developed throughout the season. But just looking at this DC game in particular, Claudio, what did you see? Because you were at the game. Everybody knows I was not at the game. I had a personal function to attend to. And as Claudio will say, yes, it was a wedding event. So, yes, I was not there.
Thank you. Thank you for mentioning before I do. No, I mean, you know, the way I saw the game, Nick, particularly, it seemed like it was a very disputed game. Which really, I mean, personally, I didn't expect it to be that disputed because I thought Nashville was going to take care of business, if not early on, at least through the whole game. But they were not as brilliant as this being. I mean, the team dominated most of the game and every facet of the game. I'm going to say that during that game, the tactical drawing by BJ and the collective performance and it also the individual performance were not to the standards that the team being or at least had been done in previous games and even after that game. So if the team looked superior because it did, he just didn't play. To make that superiority come into the, you know, the games. I mean, the fact that the Luis Barraza, the keeper for DC, was one of the players of the game, not only because of it's kind of hard to say because they were not even big saves. Well, the few saves that he made, he was just part of the whole game because people were the stands just got a, you know, decided to, anytime he touched the ball, people went on his case for whatever reason. Something he did very early, I can't remember what it was. We were discussing it. Some of us at the press box didn't see it, but the fans did, and then that was the whole thing, the whole game. So, I mean, think about it, Nick. The fact that I'm talking about something so crazy is just a part of what a game that at some point, especially in the first half, was very boring.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Nashville trying to, you know, adjust to DC United, and you mentioned just the lack of, I guess, creativity. I mean, looking at the passing maps and the grids and stuff, Nashville, they played with the ball majority of the time, and their side of the half, they're just trying to just generate some sort of passing lane to open up some space, to create some diagonal passes in there. It just didn't seem to pan out for them. There was a lot of movement on the left side of the ball when it came to, you know, Daniel Lovitz and, you know, Chris Applewhite and Jack Mayer. There was a lot of rotation back there, just trying to get some open space. And Nashville just couldn't seem to get past, you know, those second and third lines when you're getting, you know, on goal. I mean, they had a few chances, but nothing in particular that really stood out to anybody that would really stand out as in, you know, a goal scoring opportunity.
One of the things that this team has been doing, which is it's kind of a funny comparison, but it's the way it is. You know, you've seen a indoor soccer game when all those short passes and speedy passes come up, because that's the only way you can actually get to the other goal and try to score. Well, Nashville has been pretty good at that, even inside the box of other teams. On this one, they were not, like you said perfectly, Nick, they were not even that close. There were opportunities there, not clear. I mean, I'm not going to say there were clear opportunities. As a matter of fact, Murrell had a very close, very, I mean, he had the winner. Mm-hmm. He had the winner. One of those rare mistakes by Andy Nahart, which he rarely does. But he did one at, I can't remember, I think, minute 92, Nick. He lost the ball there coming out, and Murrell had it in front of Joe Willis, and he blew it over the post. But it was 1-0. There was nothing else to do after that game, and that tells you that, you know, Nashville is not prompt to see mistakes like that. But that was part of a game. Mistakes everywhere, pretty much.
Yeah,
that's what they.
And also too, Claudio, just looking at the lineup, like, when I mentioned a lack of creativity, it's almost like Nashville, and I said this in a previous podcast, I think Ahmed Kasem is a successor to Hani Mukhtar whenever Mukhtar is not able to, you know, produce at the highest level anymore. I think he is the number 10 that Nashville might be replacing. I'm not saying now, but I'm saying in the future, ways down the line. But I think Gaston Brugman, you know, they play him at that central attacking role, and he's just a creator. He's just a creator when it comes to stuff like that. He is the connecting piece to the attack and the midfield. And that's one thing. When you have Mukhtar, Kasem, and Brugman all in at the same lineup, it's almost like the same players but in different positions, and you try to figure out, well, how do you get this to generate good opportunities on net? And it's tough because when you start a guy like Teal Bunbury up top, and nothing against Teal, Teal puts in really good minutes. This game, to me, I think BJ took a gamble, but he took a calculated risk when it came to putting out this lineup, just primarily because a lot of guys, the legs are starting to get worn. And like I mentioned at the beginning of the season, I really want to see how this team plays against these lower seeded teams in the table and how they're able to respond and, you know, build through that just concern. And that concern is building enough attacks against these lower sided teams. And that's just my only concern out of that game. It's understandable why they didn't score a lot of goals. You know, I was kind of hyping up this game to a lot of my coworkers at the station, and I was like, yeah, this game would be fun if, you know, Nashville probably win 3-1 or 3-0 or 2-0 just because of the recent success they've had and just the way they've been able to create the game. And when you put out a lineup like this, and nothing against any of the guys out there, I just think a lot of these pieces don't really add up into creating good chances. There's a lot of creativity on the pitch, don't get me wrong, but I don't think there's enough aggressive attack creativity when it comes to that. There's a lot of diagonal creativity, but not a lot of direct forward creativity.
Well, BJ was the first one to recognize that the problems in the last third of the field were key to not being able to beat the DC United team that really is not a good team at this point. Mm-hmm. Might have the individual players, but as a team, it's just not a good team right now. I think they lost again last night. You know, well, and that tells you what it is. But this is a lost opportunity, in my opinion. Nashville should have won this game. It had 3 more points under the belt. You know. And even BJ mentioned the fact that there were changes in the lineup. Now, one of the things, and don't get me wrong, because what I'm going to say, one of the guys that I want to see have success in Nashville is Gaston Brugman, because I like the way he plays.
Yes.
I like that type. We discussed this before. I like the way he takes care of the ball. You know, though we don't see many of those players anymore. However, I have to say, and of course, I'm not anybody to tell Gaston how to do or not to do stuff, but he needs to give more quality minutes to his team if he wants to play more. You know, I think if we're talking about lost opportunities, Gaston lost an opportunity here as well. I mean, he was supposed to be the guy, in my opinion, that will just manage the quarterback, the team in the middle, and that's the position you're talking about that he played I think that's his position, mm-hmm. and he needs to take care of those opportunities and actually produce more. I guess it doesn't matter if the rest of the guys don't do it, but he needs to show that he can do it. If somebody else fails, that's fine, but not him. And I didn't see from Gaston what I was expecting, to be honest with you. I mean, I still remember, what was that game that we always talk about that he played very well, Nick?
It was the U.S. Open Cup match they played against Chattanooga, and BJ brought out that 4-3-3 formation.
Was that him?
Yes.
On playing, yeah, well, that kind of particular game, we haven't seen it yet. So for me, after that, I don't know if it's the lack of confidence, if the fact that he's not getting enough minutes and he might be upset, or I'm not sure. I don't want to say what he might be thinking. But the fact is that Gaston is not only a guy that the team needs to play better minutes, more minutes, but he actually needs to show his quality, because he has it.
Yeah,
I mean, in terms of quality, he's one of the best guys in the team. Honestly, we're seeing him everywhere. I mean, there's a whole history of him, even in Italy. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't go to Italy, you don't play in Italy if you're not good, to be honest. Really,
you're right.
That's just a fact.
He was a part of a lot of those teams in Italy, in Serie A and Serie B, especially with Pescara. Pescara, they played a very attacking, kind of almost very similar to BJ's style, in that like 4-2-2, 4-2-3-1, whatever. Whatever you want to call it. I mean, Gaston was always in an attacking position. He kind of played like Hani Mukhtar early on in Mukhtar's career. But, you know, as his career has progressed, he's kind of taken that more, I guess, Regista-style mezzala midfielder, where it's that just creativity bringing into it all. And, I mean, don't get me wrong, he's not a terrible player, and I'm not saying he's a bad player. I just think the squad selection kind of hindered his abilities in some aspects. I think, you know, in this year so far, Mukhtar has been the guy that has dropped into pockets, that's opened up space for other players. And he's, you know, been the guy to drop into the midfield to create space for people on the outside. Well, then when BJ Callahan puts out this lineup against DC, Mukhtar is not in any of those central positions, because you have Brugman there, because of his legs, they don't last a full 90. And so Mukhtar now has to adjust, saying, oh, wait, now I got to play that secondary striker / out on the wide of the field to the right flank. I have to play a different position now. I have to flip the switch into saying, I need to do this, I need to do that, instead of having to drop into spaces and create space for other people. He's now the focal point.
You know, and I guess one of the opinions that summarizes well what happened is Joe Willis, when he said, he told us in the press conference that it was a kind of a strange game, mm-hmm. you know, he said that they look good, but he said also that it was probably the game where he has touched the ball a lesser quantity of times. I mean, imagine that. Joe didn't even touch the ball, which means that it was only pretty much one team in the field, and they almost had a chance to win it at the end. Well, so, I mean, defensively, the team played well. Not that he had a lot of problems anyways with the DC formation, that he was probably trying to get what they got. That point in Nashville was very important for them. But he also mentioned, like you said, that there were players that didn't have enough minutes, others that probably were playing in a different position. You know, I mean, I just think that probably BJ had to do it, Nick.
Yeah.
But it didn't work that well.
Yeah, and like I said, these are calculated risk. I think for BJ, it's more of, and he's even mentioned this in press conferences since the DC match that we'll get into in a little bit, just that creating that depth. He wants that extra depth to the lineup. And I think, I think you'd fall under this as well. You're surprised with how quick these guys have adapted to the BJ Callahan system. The fact that, you know, BJ Callahan said, we're doing things this way. They've like, at the snap of a finger, the culture has been set. I think now we can say the BJ Callahan culture is set in stone, and there's no other way of thinking about it. These guys have adapted, and now they have set the bar, and they just keep setting the bar even higher with the results. And so, you know, I want to get into one more person before we hop on to the U.S. Open match against Orlando. But you mentioned this guy in the press conference, Claudio, Brian Acosta. What did you see from Brian Acosta when it came to the DC United match when he was subbed in?
Well, I mean, I saw Brian. Brian came in well, to be honest with you. I just see Brian as one player that needs more minutes because of his game. His game doesn't develop as well when he comes perhaps in a hurry, trying to change things. Like in that particular game, he needed to come and change stuff to see if the team would have scored the winning goal. That's not what I've seen Brian through his football career do. He could do it. Nothing wrong with that. But I mean, he's one of those guys that needs to settle in with the other guys in the middle for more longer minutes to be now. He tried his best. He looked good. He was a good presence in there because the one thing that Brian has that perhaps other players lack is his long passes. He can see the whole field. He passes the ball well long, and then you know perhaps that's what I was looking. That was BJ was looking for. You know, try to open those flanks that were close. Compared to the other games, he was trying to just find somebody who could switch the ball that way. And Brian, he tried to do it. The problem is that still the team was kind of caught on a trap there. You know, that's how I saw it. They just went inside the trap and they were not able to. They could move freely because there wasn't even a great pressure from DC, but they controlled the certain pieces, those pockets. Those pockets that we talked about all the time, right behind the front line of Nashville, that usually Muil, Mukhtar, and sometimes Surish, when he comes back, they explode very well. They were not there this time.
Yeah,
you know. And so, we're talking about Brian Acosta tried to come in and try to get close to those pockets, try to open them up, but they were just not there.
Yeah, they weren't. And you even asked BJ Callahan about Brian Acosta's performance and just the difficulty that DC United posed in Nashville. Here's what BJ Callahan had to say.
BJ, besides the team not being as clinical finishing tonight, like it's been in other games, was there anything that, I'm not going to say surprised you, but that Washington did different than from what you had foreseen before? I mean, before the game. Tactical, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, tactically, they've been playing in a 5-2-3 for most of the year. And then tonight, they started with a back four. And then you saw in the second half, they switched back. So for us, it was in that first half, was just about readjusting kind of how we wanted to press them. I thought we were able to create a lot of turnovers, about 30 yards from goal. We just, again, didn't handle those couple passes right. And then in the second half, it was much more of what I think we sort of prepared for. And I think you saw that in the ideas of, like, you know, just being able to press and win balls in the middle third. But again, they made it difficult to play tonight. And they have a lot of numbers behind the ball. And so it's, you know, you're in a pretty combative game that there wasn't a lot of space.
Now, in terms of what Brian Acosta did when you sent him in, what was the difference that you think he gave it to the team today when he stood right in the middle?
Yeah,
he looked really good, by the way, didn't he?
Yeah, I thought Brian did a nice job. You know, he has a different skill set to Patrick. And so when we made that change, we knew that we could try to get him on the ball. He's very good with, you know, some line-breaking passes, some long-range passing. And so we thought, you know, bringing him in, he could maybe open up the game a little bit for us. We needed to sort of, you know, try to threaten behind the line. And so, you know, I thought Brian did a really good job and then also handled the transition moments, second balls, really, really well.
You know, the space was not there for them to elaborate more. The game that they used to do. Nashville needs that little bit of space, but usually happens and comes with teams that also want to win or can win. And DC wanted it. I mean, they say, I mean, it's easy to say, he thought they probably, the way they thought about the whole game is, I mean, we're going to hold this team down. We're going to play our defense game. And if something comes up on a counter attack, we might score and we even win the game. But the rest of the stuff that they did is, it wasn't unexpected. But I'm going to say this, Nick, probably the fact that they were guys that hadn't played before or do not play for many minutes in Nashville kind of facilitated things for them.
Yeah.
I'm talking about DC in this case.
Yeah. And to that point, I think that's where BJ Callahan kind of understood the adjustment after the game, and like we're talking about now. And when it came, and we'll transition a little bit now into the U.S. Open Cup game against Orlando, BJ Callahan took another calculated risk when it came to the lineup. And especially, we've talked about Brian Acosta now. Brian Acosta gets his first start of the season in the U.S. Open Cup match against Orlando. And again, had serviceable minutes that were really good. I think the DC United match for him, when he was subbed in, gave enough minutes and enough quality for him to say, you know what, I think Acosta gets the job done, let's put it that way, and gets the start in the U.S. Open Cup match. And I think that's exactly what Nashville needed. You know, they paired him with Patrick Yazbek. BJ Callahan said it going into that game that there was a lot of knocks with the first team. And so, you know, you had to make some transitions and make some different substitutions and just a lot of different stuff. Another calculated risk, like I've talked about. But this calculated risk, I'd say, is not a risk. It's more of a gamble. Would you agree to that, Callahan? I'm going to call you BJ Callahan, Claudio.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Would you say it's more of a gamble instead of a calculated risk with that lineup they went with going against Orlando?
Well, I mean, maybe I'm not sure if it's a gamble, but because he does trust all of his guys,
right?
He know what they have, and actually he knew that because I mean the game that Brian Acosta, we're talking about him, plays in Orlando, it confirms what I said. That's Brian Acosta.
Yes,
he's not a guy that's gonna give you. He might because he's a good player. Anyways, he might give you 15, 20 good minutes if he comes as a sub. But his game develops as soon as when he's getting used to the guys in the field for longer minutes, especially when he starts the game. So if you could take the 20 minutes that he played, I think was it 20 that he played against DC, 20-25,
yes.
And then you compare the amount of minutes that he played on against Orlando, you could probably see a different Brian, more confident. He knew he was going to be in charge of the team in the middle. He knew he's the better passer, you know, and he really controlled the ball, controlled the tempo of the game. He showed right there that he is able to do stuff. But again, he is one of those players that need to play more minutes to be honestly successful in the league, successful with the team, and to be able to produce better performances.
Yeah, and another thing about Brian Acosta, especially going up against Orlando City, is that, you know, BJ Callahan uses that 4-3-3 formation almost as like a secondary, you know, formation for his team, because it's almost like they treat U.S. Open Cup and MLS completely different when it comes to formations and the players they use, which is understandable. And you want to rest your A team, basically your A team rotation, for those semifinals and finals matches for U.S. Open Cup, which is understandable. But this lineup, it had I didn't like the vibe to it. It just, I understand the Matthew Corcoran, Brian Acosta, Patrick Yazbek. But, you know, in that clip we just played from the DC match, BJ Callahan mentioned Brian Acosta and Patrick Yazbek had a little bit different of a playing style. You know, when they first brought those two guys in, I thought they were almost the same player. Not from a, I guess, youth and stamina standpoint, because we all know Acosta is a little bit older than Yazbek. But Yazbek is more that true box-to-box, where Acosta almost more is similar to Gaston Brugman when it comes to playing, just for stamina purposes. He has to be more central. His body's able to cut off those big passing lanes. And I think in a 4-3-3 formation, those, I guess, veteran-esque midfielders like a Brugman and a Matthew Corcoran, a Brugman and Acosta, you have to play them at a central midfielding role. If it's a central attacking midfield, a hard central midfield, or a defensive midfielding role. You have to play them in one of those three positions, because if you play them out on the right or left side as a central midfielder, they're going to get very exhausted very quick. And kudos to BJ Callahan for obviously understanding that. He's a very intelligent man when it comes to coaching, but just adjusting on the fly and being able to create a second system for this team and surrounding him with younger players to do all the dirty work, and have your more technically sound veteran players to cut off passing lanes and find those good, small, quick passes in between the lines. It's just genius. And I think this team has an actual balance to it, to where you can say, yeah, this team has true depth now. I was a little bit hesitant at the starting lineup. Again, I'm going to reiterate it. When you start Teal Bunbury up top and you have Jonathan Perez and Ahmed Kassem, I'd say in the first half of that match, Ahmed Kassem was the absolute man of the match. And he was throughout the game. I mean, after he subbed on Jacob Schaffelberg.
Yes, he was.
So, I mean, for me, I think you give Ahmed Kassem the man of the match for that match. But, Teal Bunbury, he does a good job, especially up top in these type of games, because they they centrally locate him at the top of the 18 and just crashes the net, which I think is genius. And that's what led them to their first goal. Obviously, Rodrigo, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but the center back for Orlando, Rodrigo Schenagel. Is that right?
Schenagel, yeah.
Yep.
So, I think that's what it is.
Yeah, so he had the own goal, but kudos to Teal Bunbury for causing that own goal. And
it would have been Teal's anyways.
Yeah, yeah, it really would have.
He misses it, Teal's put it in, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, when you're talking about, going back to a little bit, to kind of finish our thoughts about Brian Acosta,
yeah.
It's not that he cannot go box to box. He does it. The problem is, it's just a different speed. Just a different speed, the way he's going to reach back to Boston. If you compare his speed with Jaspics or perhaps Taxit, you know, that makes a big difference, especially when you think when you want to play a speedier game to be able to counterattack or do a fast transition. And you know, the fact that he put it in there with Corcoran, my guy Corcoran, that makes the whole difference, because whatever he is wasn't able to do, Matthew will do it. And he won the best games in the season for Matthew. Anyways, I mean, he's shown that BJ has a young guy. He's very young, that actually he can rely on upon any difficulties. I mean, injuries or just to change the game and somehow. But the way he kind of run and back and forth, I don't know, man. This is difficult when you have to. I wonder if. Could you play that? Just leave the thought there, because otherwise we're gonna get off topic. But I haven't seen this yet. But I don't know if we ever see it. Nick Corcoran, Jasbeck, Taxit together in one game.
I think, you know what?
That's a great question.
That is a great question, Claudio. And to that point, I'll play a clip from BJ Callahan when it comes to. You know, the formation for Nashville after the match. Here's what he had to say.
Yeah, it's a little bit of combination of everything. You know, I think as we kind of develop this team and build, you know, we want to keep learning from experiences in the past, growing and learning. And so for us, you know, I think we need to have primary and secondary systems with the ultimate idea of trying to set the players who take the field and set them up the best to have success. And then you can even see in the late game, we changed to a back five and we're getting more comfortable being able to adapt. Even in the second half, changed our defensive shape back to a 4-4-2 to try and mitigate some of the diagonals and certain rollouts and overloads they were doing. So, you know, as this group continues to learn and continues to grow, the more adaptable we are in the games, I think, you know, makes us more difficult to prepare for, but at the same time gives us multiple solutions in game.
So the reason why I play that clip right there, Claudio, is to answer your question about a midfield of Corcoran, Jasbeck, and Tagseth. You heard BJ Callahan in that clip. He mentioned it. He said the adaptability to be able to change between, you know, formations, to change between tactics. I think this Orlando City SC game just reassured that this team has depth. This team has a secondary formation that they can utilize. And I think they've used these first couple of matches in the U.S. Open Cup to almost, I don't want to say use them as preseason matches, but they've used it as a feeling out process. I think BJ Callahan, obviously he has confidence, like you mentioned before, in his players, but to have the confidence to test out a new formation in the first two U.S. Open Cup matches and to have success with them, it shows that the video aspect that I've asked in multiple press conferences now to players of just what do they see in their game and how much video is emphasized. And they've all said and reiterated that video is a vital piece to this BJ Callahan system. So with that being said, they're just consuming the knowledge and almost drinking it like Gatorade. And they're using it to their benefit. And kudos to BJ Callahan for taking the risk. And at that point, now you can call it a calculated risk. You look back and say it was a gamble at the beginning of the game. Now it's looked at as a calculated risk, and a risk that honestly looked like it was just going to turn out good for them no matter what the result. And kudos to them. Really, kudos to them. I think they've really found their second formation in a 4-3-3. And to use a 4-3-3, especially going back to Brugman and Acosta, it reminds me of the 2006, 2007, 2008 AC Milan. I think this is the same time when Andrea Pirlo was still there. You know, AC Milan used this almost like a shield where they had two center mids that would kind of close in front of Pirlo. And he would play those little ping balls to the corner flags, kind of what Nashville does now. But it's not with the midfielders, with Jack Mayer or Jason Palacios or whoever. And I think Nashville is starting to adapt to that now if they were to use a 4-3-3. The creativity in getting behind lines in this 4-3-3 formation has opened up a whole different, you know, can of worms. And it just shows how much this team has learned from the beginning of the season up to now. And just kudos to them, really. Kudos to them.
Of course. On a side comment, I wish we could see anybody even slightly close to Andrea Pirlo. My goodness.
Yeah, I know, right? This is Talking Calcio. I mean, he is the guy of Talking Calcio right there.
Oh, my God. I mean, we could mention a lot of him, but Andrea Pirlo is one of those guys that, I mean, like I said, doing just parentheses, one of those guys that I miss in soccer. You know what I mean?
This is the guy. Absolute artist of the game.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, this is the guy that I love. I mean, it doesn't matter if he was playing against my team or not. I just love to see him playing. And you know, this is one of those players. But, you know, going back to those you mentioned, you know, and you mentioned a couple of guys also. I think one, but not that you forgot, I just didn't mention. You said Kassem. Kassem comes into the game. He actually manages to play a very good game. Very good game. He was messing up with those defenses. He drove him crazy right there in Orlando for sure. And that Orlando had the main team on the field. I mean, let's not forget that they were not using any subs or anything else. They had the main team in the field, and Nashville managed them well. But some guys did manage to play one of the best games of the season. Kassem is one of them. Jonathan Perez played a very sound game, and he did as well last night. We had to talk about it a little later. But this is what my common question goes like this, Nick. When you see Ahmed Kassem, even with his frustration, because I know he's one of the guys that wants to play more minutes, maybe be a starter, and perhaps the same thing you could say about Jonathan Perez, but they still are able to come into the game and make the difference. Even if it's a few minutes, even if they're starting, I just don't see, or my question is, why don't we see the same stuff from Brugman, like we talked earlier? You know, that would be because, I forgot to mention, Brian Acosta, the same thing. He came and said, I don't play much, but the coach giving me the chance today to start, I'm going to show him my game. Some of us already know his game. BJ obviously knows his game, but he takes advantage of the opportunity. He said, here I am. But the problem he's got, and perhaps it's similar to the problem that Brugman might have, these two guys need to start games to show their stuff.
Yeah, and this is my gut telling me this, Claudio. I don't think the Brugman and Acosta don't have the capabilities. I think they are well capable of starting, and they're well capable of doing things. I think it's the system that BJ Callahan wants to run. It requires a lot out of those players. And unfortunately for Brugman and Acosta, they're kind of at a second tier when it comes to that because of their fitness and their legs. I'm not saying they're not fit. I'm just saying just because their age, they can't last the same amount of minutes. And two, going to the video aspect of it all, I'm not saying these guys are not, you know, video-oriented, but I'm just saying for some people, the game of soccer is not analyzed through the game. They have to understand it through practice and to go through scrimmages. I think for those type of guys, I think that's what they have to do, in my opinion. I think they have to play out the game in practice to understand really what they're trying to do. Now, you can easily point things out on video, but like some people are visual learners and some people are physical learners. Whereas for me, like I have to be hands-on when I learn things. And I mean, I can look at stuff for digitally stuff like this, I could learn, right? But as for soccer, I had to be on the field. I had to really learn certain aspects to the game and I had to play through it. You know what I mean? I had to go through my mistakes and play through it. Whereas if I'm looking at it on film, like we had film back in the day, like we'd watch the previous game, I would see the mistakes I made. But when I'm on the field, I have to really feel it out, you know?
Yeah. You know, I went a little deeper into the comparison I made in between the fact that some players start and some others don't, even though the quality, technical quality on the individual the individual capacity is there. And I compare, you remember that first goal by Jaspic on that wonderful goal that he scored.
Oh yeah, that rip.
If you compare that, not only that, but the type of play that Nashville had before that game, you can tell why maybe a player plays and the other one has to wait. I mean, this goal right there, and I'm going to describe it a little bit, and you help me on this, Nick. Uh-huh. It was a clear example of the way this team, because of a BJ strategy, plays offensively. I mean, remember, they got the ball in the middle of the field, their own field. Immediately, the pass from Daniel Loves, yeah, mm-hmm. was vertically looking for somebody, and that's when he found that the header from Sam Surish, and then Jaspic attacks the space quickly, very quickly. He took care of that, and then run with the ball control and took the shot. That quickness, those quick transitions, I believe, are not able, the team is not able to make it if Brian Acosta is there, or even Brugman. Yeah. I mean, it seems to me, it's not that the team plays, we're not talking about better or worse with them or without him. It's just that the team has to change a lot for those. And so the connection that Jaspic and Eddie Taxet do in the middle, between what they do, that connection between them, the strikers and the defense, is a quick connection. Mm-hmm. It doesn't take too long for them to realize that the pass needs to go forward, or the conduction of the ball has to go forward in a speedy way. And that's what causes makes Nashville cause a lot of problems to other teams. It shows last night with the two goals. Exactly, that's the same momentum, that same stuff. Quick, very quick transitions to make it to the other half and cut the other team off guard.
Yeah, and that's something too about BJ Callahan's system that he has reiterated numerous amounts of times. Everybody attacks, everybody defends. It has become a motto for this team. And it really is exemplified week in and week out when it comes to BJ Callahan and putting out the best 11. Even if it's Jonathan Perez or even Brian Acosta or Gaston Brugman, they're all attacking. They're all defending. Can do it in different ways, but they're still all attacking and all defending. And when Nashville has their A team out there, their top 11, to me, I see a Ginga pressing. I see when Nashville loses the ball, even Sam Surridge and Hani Mukhtar, especially Sam Surridge. I've never seen a striker that attacks the ball defensively like that after losing possession. It's just, you see it with all these guys, like Patrick Gazbak and Eddie Tagseth. All those guys, they don't let the opposing team breathe. That they're on them immediately. And that's something that BJ Callahan has really broken down to the bare bones when it came down to preseason, is everyone attacks, everyone defends. And then they built off that. That's something that everyone, especially Nashville SC fans, are starting to realize now in the middle of the season. They have built off of the foundation. And like I said about the beginning of this podcast, they have established a new culture. Hands down.
They do. They have. I mean, and you know, the guys that do know about football, maybe not me, well, you know, more than I do, Nick, for sure. But the ones that really do know say that in order to be to have positive transitions in a game, a team has to have a few things that are very important for the game. And I think Nashville is getting close to this because of BJ. A quick decision making. I mean, that's usually what they do. I mean, if you look at the kind of play, a game that these guys are playing this year, Andy Nahar and even Daniel Lovitz have become those quick thinkers with some passes that are just right there. You know, instantly they kind of manage to see the ball, win the ball, and then choose to have a fast break to get somebody on board. And they also say that what do they need to have a team like this? Well, to be able midfields like they do in Nashville right now, and the forwards, they should be ready for those passes, and that's what we've seen so far this time. You know, they always ready. I mean, you were talking about Sam Surish. What's different about Sam Surish? he's able to anticipate those turnovers quickly and then get into position to receive the ball, even right there in front of the line or behind. Yesterday, the second goal the first goal that he scored was exactly that. I mean, he was able to check and see him and Mukhtar. I mean, Andy Nahar sent that big pass again. You'll see, if you haven't seen it, you have to check it and send that big pass again. And Mukhtar was already in space, but Sam was already on the other side. Three passes, one goal. That was beautiful to see because it really is the key to quick transitions. And that's what it is. And, you know, how do you conquer that? Well, with speed, of course, and vertically sending balls. Caught everybody off guard. That's what happened right there in the first goal.
Mm-hmm. And the great thing about that first goal against Toronto, as we transition to the Toronto match now, it was all one-touch finishes. One-touch pass from Andy, a one-touch pass from Hani or Alex, one of the two, and then a one-touch finish from Sam Surge. That right there is complete beauty of soccer. That's what you want to see. If you haven't seen the Netflix documentary, I think it's with FC Barcelona and Pep Guardiola. I think it's called Take the Ball, Pass the Ball. They talk about passing in their triangles, especially in the formation they use. And everything is tiki-taka. Everything's on the ground. It's your basic fundamentals passing you want to do. Nashville, even though Andy Nahar's pass was a ball sent through the air, it still was effective. And if you can do that effectively from the ground and also the air, that's what makes you a complete player and a complete team that has the chemistry to do anything.
And you could say perhaps in many times that players do what Andy did yesterday and send that ball there, and he was kind of you could say he was lucky that the defender was not ready or missed. But then if you go back to the games and see Andy doing that every single game just about, then that's just not luck. It's key on his game. I mean, something he's got, he's already managing. He see the open space. He knows his players are going to be there first, and he sends those balls. I mean, we've seen that many times already this season with goals scored when he starts that kind of a attack. I mean, that quick transition right there, three passes, one goal, like you said, that's beautiful. I mean, anytime you can repeat that kind of performance before a goal, you're probably more on the side of winning a game than losing it.
And also, too, Claudio, just getting a little bit more into the Toronto game, Nashville, I'd say they had their A side out for the most part that played in this match. They reacted in a great fashion, the response to the way they played against DC. Like you said, DC gave them a little bit of a hard time adjusting to breaking through the lines, adjusting to the tactics. Nashville came out the gates pretty much on the front foot. They were controlling possession, controlling the ball. The attacks were there. I mean, that's what led to Sam Surge's goal. When you're able to control the field, especially control the midfield in this BJ Callahan system, I think that's what set them apart from Toronto last night. Sure, there were some late game drama, but for the most part, Nashville made some good adjustments. I mean, they struggled a little bit in the first half, but second half, they were a whole different team, and they look like the Nashville as everyone knows them to play.
You mentioned it already. I mean, I thought at the beginning, when the first half is over last night, I thought that we were seeing, I was seeing a little bit or much of the game against DC United, you know, that plenty of ball control, plenty of Nashville with the ball most times, and pretty much not possession, but controlling the game, and still the quality opportunities were just not there. I mean,
right.
Because one thing is to create opportunities. The other thing is to create quality opportunities, ones that maybe provoke a save from the keeper, a good save from defenders, stuff like that. They were not there in the beginning, on the first half.
Yeah.
And so I thought maybe Nashville is going to end up playing a similar game, but then in the second half, like you said, they reacted well. And, you know, kudos to the whole team, because when that happened, when the goal, first Sam Surge goal, actually Toronto was a much better team already.
Yes.
You know, they were a much better team. And Bernardeschi, I mean, he's an awesome player. He's very dangerous by himself. They were doing already some stuff, but then that goal changed the whole thing. They put ahead the team that would deserve it, I believe, and well, they didn't lose it. It got like you said, it got a little bit worrisome at the end, but they still had it under control.
Yeah, and you mentioned too, like there was a little bit of chaos at the end of the game, at the end of the match. But especially looking at Nashville in the second half. It, like we said, it's a night and day difference. But Nashville, I would say, I take it back. Going to the first half, looking at the attacking qualities, it wasn't quality attacks, but the chances were there. And I think the one person that was not on their A game last night, or I guess against Toronto, for me personally, was Alex Moyle. I think Alex Moyle, he put himself in great position to, you know, extend the play to create better chances. But when there was that final touch to pass it off to Sam or Hani or to take a shot on goal when he should have just passed it off to someone else, I think that's where his game kind of lacked a little bit. Again, a great serviceable player. He does a really good job. He's irreplaceable in some aspects of the game for Nashville. But if he was on his A game, I think Nashville wins that game with three or four goals on the score sheet.
He's probably be the first one to tell you that you're right.
Yeah.
That's good about Alex. I mean, he knows when he's got a good game. He's good when he knows when he's seen plenty of ball and he's played well. When he knows when he's seen plenty of ball and he hasn't. And it's a shame because in a games like last night, when a guy like Will sees so many touches and he does the right thing, maybe the score would have been different from since early on. But on the other hand, we talk about a guy that came in into the game and make difference again, which is Jonathan Perez.
Mm-hmm.
Jonathan Perez make a big difference in the game when he comes in. Again, that's what I mean. I keep stressing that. And I'm going to go off the hook here to say that if, for whatever reason, Jonathan Perez was not staying in Nashville, that would be a big miss. That would be a big miss for the system, BJ Callahan's system, because when he comes in, he actually makes a big difference, and he does a great job. That second goal pass for Sam Surge, man, that's a beauty. That's a beauty right there. And in between the lines, I mean, the defender didn't see it coming and just hit, put him in front of the goal to score. That was beautiful. I mean, that was key. That was a key factor of his game all the time. Jonathan Perez, I love him. I mean, I love the way he plays. I love his effort. I love how he's become more like I'm going to say the Suri's guy in terms of how he's trying to be more productive in coming into defense. You know, he wasn't like that before. He's trying to do now. He's fighting for balls, but and very back away from his position.
Yeah.
So that goal right there shows why BJ thinks so much about this guy.
Yeah, and you make a great point about Jonathan Perez. His service off the bench is just night and day difference. Like, I'm not saying he's not a great player on the field when he starts games, because when he played against Chattanooga and started, he had a phenomenal game. That's what led to Josh Bauer's, you know, goal in that match. But, you know,
but against Toronto, he played the whole game, didn't he?
Yeah.
Most of the game,
and he played well. I think.
Yeah, he did.
I think he did. There were a few times where Orlando beat him on the outside for the most part in transition. I think that's one thing that a lot of players, especially under BJ, are starting to get adjusted to, and Ahmed Kassem is one of those guys. Like, I haven't mentioned it now, but I'll mention it, you know, going forward. Ahmed Kassem has a little bit of a hard time. When there's a foul, he kind of looks at the ref and says, hey, where's the foul? When in transition, he could just get up and start going for the ball like everyone attacks, everyone defends. Because the more and more you stay on the ground, the more and more opportunities the other team has to counterattack. And I think Jonathan Perez, going back to him, does a really good job at that. I think he's, like you're talking about, he's starting to adapt to that Callahan system when it comes to being that 1A to 1B to Sam Surge when assisting balls, and if it's loss in possession. Sam has been kind of the head director when it comes to defending on their side of the field, saying, everybody get up towards their side of the field, because you don't want to give them any space. And Jonathan Perez has responded well to that. And like you said, if he goes somewhere else, it would be a deep, deep miss for Nashville.
True. The only thing I can add to that, Nick, is the fact that Ahmed Kassem needs to understand and keep inside his mind that he cannot play and whistle the game at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the way it is. I mean, you're going to see a lot of plays that you think are foul and the referee doesn't call them to both teams. That's just the way it is. I mean, it happens every single game. Calls that go wrong either way. And Kassem needs to understand that if the foul is not called, well, if you're not hurt, get up and play, man. Mm-hmm. Get up and keep going. Because that shows what you are. What that shows that you can go fight for that ball I don't know if you need to go and foul the guy that actually did it to you. No, maybe not. But I mean, just keep fighting until you get those calls and then go from there.
Yeah, and a little bit to Kasim's game when he does try to create those fouls and you know, offensive chances. It reminds me a lot of European style soccer. I think referees are a little bit more whistle happy when it comes to any sort of knock that gets a player to go down. You can see a lot of European soccer referees tend to blow their whistle more often than not. And then you see in the MLS is very, it's a different style of soccer. It's fast paced. I don't get me wrong. Soccer. It's, you know, between the lines, you're kicking the ball around, but it's very fast paced. And there's a little bit more leniency when it comes to shoulder-to-shoulder tackles. Like, the referees let that play on. Now, you know, every referee is different. But
I mean, come on. Football is a contact sport.
Yeah, you know, for the most part.
Just keep going. You got to fight for it. The next time you put your shoulder heavier, and hopefully you don't get the call against you. But that's what it is. I mean, it's contact sport. You have to go for it hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, the problem is that I've seen, I'm not talking about the guys in particular, I mean, Nashville guys in particular, but I see a lot of players in soccer that they keep losing balls because of somebody just pushes them around. Well, don't let him push you around. You know, don't stand up your ground. I mean, Kasim in this particular case is big enough. He's probably bigger than most guys.
Take the initiative.
Do it first. Do it first, you might be able to win. Now, if you make it too obvious, then you get the call against. But what I'm saying is that complaining about calls and not calls, it really takes you away of the concentration you need for the game.
I agree. Well, moving on, Claudio, to the game coming up, that is. Well, actually, I take it back. There's one thing I did not bring up when we talked about this for the podcast.
I think I know what it is.
Walker Zimmerman.
Oh,
is back in the fold for Nashville SC. Now, Claudio, let's reiterate. Every week we ask BJ Callahan, and I'm not saying it's BJ Callahan's fault. I'm thinking a little bit it's more on Nashville SC for not putting out any health update. I get there's the HIPAA situation, HIPAA laws, can't give out personal health information. I understand that. But you could still give out some form of a written explanation as to what is going on with Walker Zimmerman on a weekly basis. We, as media members, I'll include a few names, you, Ben, Valer, myself, and Jacob, and a few others that attend all these press conferences, we've all asked at some point, what's going on with Walker Zimmerman? How is Walker Zimmerman? Is he doing good? Like, what's going on with him? And the number one answer, and I'll reiterate it, it's just status quo. As far as I know, it's just status quo. Like, you know, we're just going to see what happens. And then come Thursday into Friday, Walker Zimmerman is listed as questionable. And I'm like, okay.
But Ben again who asked the question on Thursday? I mean, when was the last time?
Yeah.
He even asked.
Ben again. Asked. He goes, it's
and
just
the answer
status
was
quo.
Still the same.
Yeah. Status quo. And I'm in my head, I'm thinking, wow, this is crazy to me. Like, how can a guy? It's almost like it's almost like a ghost appears out of nowhere, out of thin air. Oh, the ghost! It's okay. Yeah, we just tore down the house. There's no more ghost apparitions in the area. No big deal. You build the house back up. Well, he's no longer a ghost. He's a physical person. He's up there inside the second room bedroom, and he stands in the hallway, and it's a human being. You can shake his hand. It's like he's brought back to life. I'm obviously joking around right now, but it frustrates me a little bit, Claudio, the fact that we never got a true answer, and there are fans out there that are wondering, well, what's going on with Walker Zimmerman? Now he's back, Nashville won, that's great, and it's almost like it's not even worried about. Like, no need to worry about Walker's health anymore. Nashville have won, and you can forget about everything in the past. Sure, that may be the case, but at the same time, come on, we got to have a little accountability here.
Yes. You know, we all have, I know you do have plenty, I do have plenty, especially in my community, a lot of Nashville SC fans. And they keep, and since they know you cover the team, they keep asking you questions that you might not have an answer for. That's one of them.
Yeah.
That's one of them. The physical condition of players in Nashville Soccer Club, not only Walker's, but everybody else, after a long, prolonged injury, the information is not there. And they keep asking you, well, what is that guy coming in? What's going on? What's wrong with him? When is he coming in? You know, I mean, those questions are, I've been there forever since the team is in the MLS. And in Walker's case, the same thing. And this week, I'm already, since yesterday, I'm sorry. Since yesterday, I have already a couple of two or three calls, Nick. Maybe you have, I'm not sure, mm-hmm. where people asking, hey, isn't that weird that right after the Mauricio Pochettino puts Walker in the 60 guys available for the U.S. national team for the Gold Cup, all of a sudden Walker appears out of the cloud, mm-hmm. and is on the bench for Nashville and even comes in. I said, well, I mean, I can understand the question. I can see what they mean by that, you know. From no information whatsoever, all of a sudden the 60 man up, the 60 man up from the national team makes Walker come in. Nothing against him. I'm not saying anything about it, but it allows fans to think that way, you mm-hmm. know. And they come up to you and ask and make those comments, and I make them just because it's got some merit to it, you know.
Yeah,
it does.
And to that point too, Claudio, like, we all know BJ Callahan has the history to being, you know, associated with the U.S. men's national team. He was the, you know, the guy that filled in when Greg Berhalter was, you know, sacked, essentially.
He won the Nations Cup with him.
He did, against Mexico. And So BJ Callahan probably still has his connections with the U.S. men's national team and probably has Pochettino's phone number. And Pochettino's probably been, you know, texting and calling him and getting updates for Walker and seeing what that status has been like. And so...
I bet you Pochettino did have the updates, though. He did get the updates that we didn't get.
You don't think so?
No, I'm sure he did.
Oh, yeah.
I think the ones we didn't get.
For sure. Yeah. And like, I get it. It's all business. I understand it. But at the same time, I think as media members, we deserve a little bit of answers. And so I wonder if this will be asked coming up in the press conference Thursday or Tuesday, maybe, because they have a game Wednesday. So we'll see what happens. But... this is just, it's interesting, but with Nashville winning, that is, you got to keep moving on. And my question I asked last night after the match was Walker Zimmerman. He's back in the fold. What does that mean for the center back pairings? And here's what BJ Callahan had to say.
I think the competition is for everybody in that back line and center back. So yes, the answer is I'm going to have very tough decisions. The center backs have been playing really well. The back line has been playing really well. But that's part of it. And that's what winning teams have is depth and guys are calm on. So, you know, we'll see how everybody recovers and we'll put out the best team that we can versus Columbus.
I mean, he's right. He's going to have a tough time deciding there, but I mean, I'm gonna be direct to you. Do you need to change anything on the middle of the field, on the back of the field for Nashville right now?
No.
I mean, and let's forget Walker, any name. You don't need to bring anybody the way things are going. And this is what I'm gonna wait for. See, and I'm not trying to put BJ on a spot now. He's actually the coach. He knows more than I do for sure. He works with the guys all week. He's the one that makes the decisions. But if I take his words, because he said it before, that when things are going well, he doesn't like to change anything, then I believe Walker's staying on the bench. Am I right?
Yes, but at the same time, you go back and look at the U.S. Open Cup match, and this team has been playing well with the regular B-side, and then they throw out literally everybody. They throw out the kitchen sink, and they just experiment. So, like, I don't understand that. So to your point, I understand, yes, you probably should keep Walker on the bench, but I don't know if I can stay true to that. I don't know if I can trust to see if BJ will not put both of them out there. Because let's remember, yes, Columbus has not been great as of late, but they're still fifth in the Eastern Conference. They're still at the top of the table for the most part. Tied in points with Nashville, by the way, at 27. This is a great transition into the preview for this upcoming week. I mean... Do you decide to maybe put Palacios and Walker together? I mean, obviously, kind of being redundant there talking about it, but that is a serious question I think that should be looked at. It's for sure as a competition, as BJ Callahan stated there. In my opinion, I would probably maybe bring in Walker just to put him in with Jason, but...
That brings up another question. Okay. Why would you? Because I mean, I don't see anything wrong about bringing them all together, both together to play in the back. But why would you sit? What would be the excuse to sit Mayer, one of the most consistent players in the team right now? I mean, would you I mean, what is a good explanation for that? The only thing I, and probably the easiest one that anybody can give me is, well, to give him a break, to give him a rest. Okay, that's it. Okay, I understand that. But besides that, I don't see any reason why you'll sit Mayer in the actual lineup.
I mean, I get that point, but at the same time, when you have, I don't know, you have a few games under your belt with Mayer and Palacios together in the month of May, you got to look at the rest of the schedule. You have, you know, a short window here. You go play Columbus Wednesday the 28th, and then right around the corner you have New York City, and then you got to think, well, that's a Saturday game. Do I end up playing Walker or Jack? In my opinion, Claudio, Nashville could get away with playing Mayer and Palacios up until the end of June if they wanted to.
Now, on the other hand, and I think this is the fact, the one player that you can actually switch with, if you can, in my opinion, if you're going to play Walker, Palacios has to stay in the bench, or vice versa, but not because of Mayer. And the main reason is because of they're both right-footed.
Yeah.
They're both right-footed. And Mayer is the only one left-footed there. So I don't know. You're going to have to switch things a lot. And they're unnecessarily, that's the main thing, in order to have either one of them play.
That's fair.
I mean, would that be fair to Palacios? No.
No.
Well, but that would be the only way you can play Walker Zimmerman.
It's a fair understanding, like a fair take. But I just think later on in the season, when you have those key games against Inter Miami, those key games against St. Louis, just those teams that put up goals. I mean, obviously Inter Miami and St. Louis, you know, I wouldn't say for St. Louis, but Inter Miami, they're struggling because of all the tournaments they're in. But you got to look at those type of games when you have teams that score, you know, goals and you have the unthinkable happen. It almost makes me think you got to have both of your A center backs. Like we all know that Jack Mayer is a good complement to either Palacios or Walker. Like that's what makes a good center back, you know, pairing. And yes, Jack is a left-footed player and you have Palacios as a right-footed player. Understandable there. But then that leads me to think with the recent signing Nashville has had with, I think his name is Tate Schmidt, I believe his name is, the free agent they signed.
Yep.
He is a left-back substitution guy. He's one of those rotational depth pieces. Wyatt Mayer is a natural center back.
Yep.
And he even stated in the U.S. Open Cup, you know, post-match when Ben asked him the questions, are you right-footed, left-footed? And I believe he said he was left-footed, but he, you know, had a good shot with his right. Wyatt is a left-footed center back. So then would that mean the depth would be...
Okay, now, let me interrupt you because I have a question right there. Okay. Second that spot. If Mayer is a left center back,
uh-huh,
he's playing well anytime he comes in, why hasn't he given a rest to Mayer at all on that position?
Because of the lack.
I mean,
of
because you, if you're gonna tell me you're gonna sit Mayer because you need to rest him, I probably come counter back to you and say, hey, well, you had the guy there. You always had the guy there. Mayer is a guy. Why haven't you played and give him a rest then?
I think it's because of the lack of depth at left back, because Wyatt Mayer has been such a utility knife for them that if Wyatt Mayer is playing center back, they don't have a left back to back up Daniel Lovitz at that point. Now with the signing of Tate Schmidt, I think that allows them to have more of a balanced depth chart. When it comes to left backs, you have Daniel Lovitz, then you have the Tate Schmidt guy, and then now you have Jack Mayer and Wyatt Mayer as your center backs.
On the other hand, Nick, if Walker is going to have any chance of making the team to play at the Gold Cup, he needs to play right now with the team.
That's what I'm saying. Like, why would you?
Would that be a good reason to actually switch everything around?
I mean, no. For Nashville's sake, no. But for a U.S. national standpoint, yes. And would I say maybe Pochettino has maybe given B.J. Callahan a few phone calls and saying, hey, Walker needs some minutes, and maybe that's B.J. Callahan saying, okay, I'll give him some minutes, but he didn't clarify he'll start him or not. Maybe Walker just comes off the bench the next handful of games before the Gold Cup. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's what Walker will do, and B.J., I think that's what's going to happen is they will have Walker come off the bench the rest of the games up into the Gold Cup, and the last MLS match before Walker has to leave for U.S. Gold Cup practices and stuff, they will give him a full start. I think that's what will happen.
if you're the national team coach and you have three or four guys that play center back in any team, whatever they are, they're starters. Then you actually say, well, I'm going to call up Walker, even though he's only playing 15 minutes in Nashville every game. Would you do that?
I mean,
yes.
For the situation U.S. national team is in, yes, they have to. But if it were me and you had really good depth and really good players, probably not. But they have to add Walker into that U.S. men's national team lineup, in my opinion. Not lineup, I mean, just mean on the roster with Pulisic's, with Christian Pulisic pulling out from the Gold Cup, they got to have a face, and the face is Walker Zimmerman.
You're talking about leadership.
Yeah, that's what I mean. The face and leadership.
I take that one. It's fair. And don't take me wrong. I would like to see Walker going in, start, play as many minutes as possible with the national team. I love to see that. I've seen it before.
Yeah.
I enjoy Walker playing anywhere, here or there. You know, the only reason we're talking about all this is because of the fact that he just appeared all of a sudden. You know,
right. He's nowhere. Casper. He appears out of nowhere. That might be Walker's new nickname, Casper. I don't know.
Anyway, my gosh.
Oh, man. Well, going into Columbus, we'll make it pretty brief here, Claudio, because we've kind of talked ad nauseum about this. But Columbus, you mentioned it before the podcast began. You said the last four games, Columbus, 9 points they have dropped. They've only had 3 points to gain in four games. Whereas for Nashville, they've only dropped 2 points in their last four and 10 points they've gained. And now both of them are tied in points in the Eastern Conference at 27. Nashville, you have to start talking about them for the Supporters Shield. They're only about four points because, you know, Vancouver has 31 and all of MLS. Nashville's at 27, trailing 4 points behind. Nashville is a true contender for Supporters Shield. You have to start looking at it.
You know, for any time Nashville has played in Columbus the last, since they are in the MLS, I've been there in the stadium. And most times, not that I thought that the team was going to lose the game, but it didn't surprise me if it did, because Columbus is such a good team.
Yeah.
Their history in the MLS is big, is huge compared to Nashville. And not only that, the way they play when they are local is very strong, you know. And so seeing Nashville losing a game there is not going to be the last thing we see. But this is the time, perhaps, because of those numbers that you just mentioned, that I see Nashville being a favorite to beat Columbus at home. You know, it's just the way it is, the way teams are playing, the way teams are actually making the way to win games. You know, Columbus is having a lot of problems with that, away and at home. And Nashville is a team very dangerous right now. We saw it yesterday. They were dangerous all game long, you know, even in the first half where they were not as clinical. But this is a team that if you give them a chance, they're gonna put one against you. So if Columbus is not having the thing together like it looks like right now because of the amount of points that they've lost, then they're in for a big game where I could probably say right now that even if I said that I was never surprised that Nashville lost there, this time I'm not gonna be even the slightest surprise that Nashville comes away with a victory.
Yeah, it'll be a very tight victory. Let's put it this way. I'm trying to do the math here because Charlotte FC loses to DC United in the U.S. Open Cup. Charlotte was pretty mad about that. They come out of the gates against Columbus. They beat Columbus 3-2 full-time, 5 goals in one match. It's a pretty impressive game. As for Columbus Crew, you rest a few players in that game. You're getting ready for Nashville. Nashville comes out with one of their top sides against Toronto. They get the win. This is where I think you're going to see a big back and forth, you know, Godzilla versus, I don't know, what's the other nasty character there, Claudio? Was it King Kong? Sure. Yeah. King Kong versus Godzilla. That's what this match is going to be. It's going to be Godzilla versus King Kong. And Nashville definitely have their hands full with Columbus because Diego Rossi, even though Columbus has been not in the best form, he's still
scoring goals. I have a better comparison, though.
Do I?
I have a better comparison, even though it's a funny one.
Let's hear it.
You said Godzilla against King Kong.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about Nick Frazier and a big, huge pizza.
All right. That's enough. All right. Everything has to come back to food. I get it. And I wasn't the one that did it. Claudia's over here.
It's lunchtime, man. Come on.
It is lunchtime. It is definitely lunchtime. And then I will say this to wrap it up. This is the Talking Calcio podcast. Claudio, it's been fun.
Yes.
We're going to have a lot more of these coming forward. We recapped a lot in an hour and 10, 15 minutes or so. So let's get your prediction real quick before we're done, and we'll wrap it up. Claudio, what do you got for the Columbus and Nashville match coming up this Wednesday?
I got Nashville 2-1.
Okay, 2-1. I'm going to go with Nashville. I want to go 1-1 draw, but Nashville really needs a clean sheet. That was one of the questions I asked BJ after the match, but this team needs a clean sheet. I think it will take
them. They should have gotten it last night.
They should have, and I think
they were careless in that goal.
They really were. And I think if Nashville gets a clean sheet versus Columbus, it is a statement win. Not only for Nashville, not only for the Eastern Conference, but as the league as a whole in MLS for them to be Supporters Shield contenders, like true contenders. So I'm going to go Nashville wins 1-0. Only one goal. How crazy is that one?
No, it's still a victory. 3 points.
Yeah, 3 points indeed. I think Joe Willis has a big match. And that's all we got for the Talking Calcio podcast. If you have any questions, you want to send in questions for us to answer for the Talking Calcio podcast, you can hear it on the Game Nashville Sports Network. Reach out to Nick Frazier 23 on Twitter, and you can reach out to Claudio Villalobos at Nash Total Sports Twitter. Reach out to 1025 The Game via DM, and we'll answer some questions for you about Nashville SC. And we'll see you on the next episode. Ci vediamo.